Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
How are you, Jen?
I'm very well. How are you, Pam?
Good. It's good to be together again.
It's good to be together again.
It's a couple of weeks.
Like I said before, Cagney and Lacey without the shoulder pads. Holding it down here at the morning after.
Absolutely.
We've got some exciting people to talk to this morning. I'm very thrilled. A good friend of Pam's, actually.
Yes. One of my best friends. Brian Block, the general manager at Socorot.
Amazing.
Yes.
And two handsome gentlemen from 750.com, an exciting website we will be discussing momentarily.
Very kind.
And we've got a couple of new things to share with you,
Jen,
this week.
Jen, I think you have something that you're going to start us off with.
I do.
It's going to be fun.
So we're trying to shake it up a little bit this month and try some new things out. And we here at The Morning After are pleased to prepare a new weekly segment called Front of House, a series which chronicles the hilarious mishaps of New York City servers. Now, our inaugural installment, simply titled Blood and Flame, goes a little something like this. Restaurant X, all names have been changed to protect the innocent, was a lovely place to work. As self-proclaimed veteran New York City server, I took pride in its well-crafted cocktails, award-winning design elements, and high-functioning management team. We were a happy lot, a teeming little hive of worker bees with money on our minds. There was a careful choreography to our routine on the floor, and given my two full semesters of Modern Dance 1, my sophomore year of college, I fancied myself the Madame Premier of this delicate service dance. There was one slight hindrance, however, to the flow on the floor, and one fateful winter day, things went terribly, violently wrong. The tables in Restaurant X were set up in long rows, banquet hall style, so to navigate between them, one would have to turn completely sideways with their arms up at their ears, suck in their tummy, and shimmy down the row until it lasts free at the other end. We called this the Twiggy. It was about 8 p.m. this particular night, and we were already in the thick of the dinner rush. My eight-table section included a bachelorette party, who seemed intent on getting so drunk that they would forget the entire evening had ever happened in the first place. Now, it should be said that the banquet tables are lined with hundreds of tiny tea light candles. Please bear this in mind. I'm delivering a drink in the northeast corner of the restaurant when suddenly I hear what can only be described as a single-pitched Ethiopian war cry. I look to my left. Guests are gasping. Bussers are running. I follow the sight line of everyone else in the room to see my bachelorette party is now in flames. Yes, the matron of honor leaned a little too close to one of those tea lights, and thanks to a generous amount of hair product, took half of her luscious locks up in a hell ball. I immediately throw my arms up and begin twiggying as fast as I can towards the flames. As I get closer, I see that the bride, in an attempt to extinguish the fire, is whacking her matron of honor in the head with her purse. My heart is in my throat. I'm nearly at the end of the aisle when a man seated directly to my right throws his hands up to punctuate a point he's making to his wife mid-meal. His arm smacks me directly in the face and my nose immediately begins to gush blood. I waste no time with his apologies and can hear him yelling after me, "Wait, let me get you a napkin! Wait, wait!" as I twiggy off to the towering bridal inferno. Clutching my nose, my other arm still high in the air, I finally make it to the bachelorette table just in time to see the bride, now ill from the smell of burning hair, vomit all over herself, the dinner table, and the poor matron of honor. In a span of 30 seconds, our poor little bistro had seen fire, blood, and a regurgitated beet and goat cheese salad. In the end, the matron of honor was just fine, and other than a slight head injury from the purse whacking, was not harmed. I went home that night, my ego bruised and my nose swollen, but with a profound new appreciation for my coworkers. A back waiter named Oscar attended to my bloody nose while a fellow server escorted the flame maiden and purse bride to the bathroom. The mess was cleaned immediately, and 5 minutes later, service was back to status quo. I once told my mother that working in a New York City restaurant was a bit like delivering a thesis on roller skates while juggling three live babies. And that night, with a smile on my face and a cocktail napkin shoved up my nose, I knew that I was right.
Yes. So I think we are also encouraging anyone out there listening going forward to...
We are. Starting next week, yes. I think we're going to hopefully open this up to submission, so we can hear from our fellow friends in the industry and their wacky tales of the pratfalls and pitfalls of working in the service industry.
And what's the best way for somebody to get us this information? Is it just to call in the
studio? Well, we haven't officially opened it yet.
Okay.
I think...
So to be decided.
Yes, wait with bated breath, as I'm sure you all are. And next week we shall announce, I think we're going to open an email address so people can sort of submit their stories, and then we'll feature the selected ones on there. But for now, awesome. Yes.
Or for now, if you happen to know Jen, just send her an email and with your story.
Yeah, just a carrier pigeon or, you know,
smoke signals.
Anything,
you know.
Will do. Just a crude hand signal or across a crowded bar.
Fantastic. So I think we're going to take a quick break right now, and then we're going to come back and speak with the guys of 750.com and hear their story.
Sounds good to me. We'll be right back in the morning after.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
So, welcome back to The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
This is Jen Tulloch with my beautiful co-host, Pam Stubbs.
Thank you. So, we are going to introduce you to a couple of our guests that we have in studio right now. We have Aaron Sherman and, I'm going to say this hopefully correctly, Gianfranco Verga. I hope that's close. It might not be right, but...
That's lovely. I like it.
Bravo.
So, you guys are from 750.com. And I'm going to let you give us a little information about what it is instead of me telling the people.
Well, first, thank you so much for having us.
Of course.
We're
thank
excited
you for being here.
It's actually my first time at Roberta's. I've been trying to...
Really?
I know, it's crazy.
I know, it's shocking.
It should be said, then, there is a lovely margarita pizza in front of you.
I just had a slice and it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I spent the break trying to figure out what restaurant X was, but to no avail.
We're going to all take guesses at the end.
I think
we're going
to
decide.
Perhaps that'll be part of this segment.
Yeah,
we'll
exactly.
have to figure out.
We're all going to make a choice and see if we can figure it out. So,
so shall we start?
Yeah. How did you get? What is your background? How did you get started? How did you get from point A to B and starting 750.com?
Aaron and I met in college, actually, at NYU. We two very opposite ends of the country, him from California, me from Staten Island. That's right.
Power.
Yes. Great wine from both.
That's right. Great wine from both.
Clearly, your backgrounds
have brought you to this. The nutrients
and the trashy. Have brought you to this place.
We were dormed together on the same floor, and we met and had very similar interests. We actually went to study in Florence together, where we really fell in love with wine. Met some great people. They toured us around. And who is it? Dino?
Yeah.
Some good people.
Lots of friendly people that, introduced us, I think, for the first time to what it meant to have wine as a serious part of the culture, part of the meal, all the things that kind of probably brought a lot of us to wine in restaurants in the first place.
We all have those moments, I think, where like we're like, oh, this is what wine is all about. This is not, you know, drinking cheap American wine and while we're in college.
And it's also not a closed vault. It's not a closed party. Because I feel like that's...
Exactly.
There's one of two experiences that we have in our culture with wine before you really know about it or really invite it into your life in the proper form, which is... Yeah. I don't know about it, so it doesn't matter, so I'll just drink what's cheap so I can get drunk on it.
Yeah. Right.
Or I can't, I'm not smart enough to know about
it.
Or
I'm just too scared because it seems like a very scary thing.
Which is why I think what you're doing with 750.com is so cool and such an awesome tool. So tell us about the service it provides.
So, you know, we both found our way into restaurants and kind of worked our way into buying positions. I opened up Lartuzzi with Joe Campanelli, actually, who I know
I
does some
Lartuzzi.
Stuff over here. Yeah, awesome stuff. And I was at WB50. And then most recently was out in L.A. Running the beverage program at the SLS Hotel and the Bazaar, Jose Andres' place out there.
Great.
But so, you know, kind of buying on large and small scale, kept seeing these same problems. Gianfranco had this, you know, great background working with distributors and seeing how just getting information out to customers about products and pricing availability was such a challenge. So I'm going to let Gianfranco tell a story, actually, about we found our other business partner kind of serendipitously.
Yeah, he was actually, we both worked at a bar in the East Village together.
Which and, one? Can you name that bar?
We could. It was Lewis 649.
It's okay.
Yeah, really where we got our, I got out my start anyway. So we both worked at that place at different times, and both of us had a regular. His name was Neil. He was actually known in the whole mixology world as Neil Mathematics.
PhD from Stanford.
Of course, always.
Yeah, computer science PhD.
There's always
at Stanford.
Somebody in the
So he just knew so much about cocktails, and we had this idea for years. And you know, the two bar restaurant people, you know, you need someone technically savvy. And he was our golden ticket, sitting right in front of us for all these years. And we came together and just started sketching things down on paper, and all of a sudden the addition of Neil, we brought it to life with our lead engineer Steve Pike, who's also an amazing gentleman. He saw the vision and he saw the potential to really affect an industry, so together we started building it out. Now we started with a few distributors. Now we've aggregated about 80 the portfolios of 80 of the top wine and spirit and beer and sake distributors in the state.
And I mean, you guys, I was on the website yesterday officially for the first time, and I mean, you have all the big ones. I mean, you have the major players, which is awesome, because you can go onto this one website and look at everyone's portfolio, which being in any kind of beverage position or restaurant or retail, to have that ability and not have to go to a bunch of different websites to look at portfolios, it's awesome.
Right.
It's awesome. To
get
everything at once.
Yeah, totally. And you know, it's just such a frustrating process when you're buying and you know a product that you want to buy, but you know, who knows who sells it, and you send out an email or you send a text to a friend, and this is how we find, you know, products that kind of make our businesses function, make us money. You know, same thing referencing pricing and staying up to date on all of that. So, you know, by bringing all of the distributors together on one platform, it finally becomes possible to, you know, distribute this information super efficiently. You know, and the goal behind the site was to make it a really clean, really easy way to search and find these things.
And it is. It is. I mean, it was so easy when I went on. I was like, oh, this is so simple. I can look here and I can do this and I can just search and I can add them to my distributor list. And
incredibly user-friendly. Our producer, Jesse Kiefer, was showing me yesterday. She was taking me through and showing me how to navigate, and I was like, if a fool like me can figure this out, then anyone can use this. It's incredibly well designed. I was very impressed. Yeah, I'm excited to put it to practice.
Can we talk a little bit about, because we started talking about this before the show, the digital tasting part of it and the digital tasting books and whatnot. So if you guys want to tell us a little bit about what that piece of it is.
So I'm sure our listeners, many of you have all been to some wine portfolio tastings in your lives. For those of you who know, you have a wine glass in one hand, a pen and paper in the other. I've witnessed myself and been part of it myself, awkwardly trying to balance all those things, trying to write, find an edge to write on. It doesn't work. So we thought we'd try to solve that problem.
The idea with it is because we have all this great product information about the distributors we work with, we figured we'd digitize the tasting experience. So, you know, the same way that you would receive a printed book when you walk into the tasting, now you can just follow a link to 750, and you'll have all of the wines that are at that tasting organized by table. You can filter, you know, on a grape variety and see where in the room all the Pinot Noirs are and just make your way around and taste them. You can search on a producer name and find those wines. So just a really quick, kind of clean experience. And then you can, you know, put your ratings on them, put your personal private tasting notes on it.
I dare say it's a little like Netflix.
No, you make it test that point. Only in the sense it's so cool to me that you can, I mean, it saves your preferences. So you can go back. And I would also like to commend you on how eco-friendly it is. I mean, that's so
true.
Great.
That's another good point. So, so is that kind of the newest part of the website right now? That's what the focus is at the moment, is getting... I mean, I also love that I went on and I could get, like, all the dates of the different tastings. Instead of, again, have, like, you get these postcards in the mail and you have, like, 8 billion postcards, like, posted to, you know, your fridge or your work, your office, whatever. And this was nice. It's like, all in a line, dates and where it is. It made it so much easier to know.
I mean, bar and restaurant.
What people. I want to go to and what I don't. I can pick and choose.
So. Right. I know for myself and some of my good friends in the industry, we're not the most organized bunch in a lot of the cases.
Really?
No.
I have no comment
on that. The booze has nothing to do with that.
The morning after, it's called that for a reason. We try to, again, organize this tasting calendar for people so it's right in front of them all the time. And going back quickly to the point that I wanted to touch on about these digital tasting books, when you show up to the tasting and take all your ratings and notes, then the next day or just a few hours later, when you get back home to your desktop, all the notes and ratings you've taken at the tasting are there waiting for you. Something that... after tasting 5 or 6 wines, sometimes you forget.
Again, easy to revisit, which is always nice, because we were talking again before the show. It's like, you know, you get to the point you've tasted so many wines and you're like done with holding this book in your hand and you put it down on a table and now you've lost it and it's your notes are gone. So this is nice. It's there. It's there for you. It's easy to come back to. You can look at it the next day and be like, oh yeah, that's the wine I liked.
And something also that, you know, that we're hoping people will grow into as they start using the site more is that each buyer, each sommelier, each user has their own personal account, and it can be attached and detached to different liquor licenses. So as you move around the industry, as you change jobs, your personal profile stays your own.
Which is awesome.
So all the, you know, ratings and notes that you've taken from any tastings or just things as you've been browsing and organized, they're all, you know, going to be possible for you to reference as you move through the industry and move through your career.
Because we all know we move through the industry very quickly sometimes.
Yes, we do. And it's not just wine. It's beer and sake, you said.
That's right.
It's everything. Exactly. So it's all fantastic. All spirits and whatnot. So I'm going to also bring our other guest into the mix right now, just so we can introduce him and say hello. So Brian Block, he is the general manager of Socarrat right now, which is a great Spanish place on 19th Street.
A fantastic Spanish place.
Excuse me, a fantastic Spanish place.
The best.
Brian has moved through his Spanish / Portuguese career there.
Iberian career.
From Boqueria to Aldea and now to Socarrat. Boqueria and Aldea being kind of bartender, head of bar manager, cocktail person extraordinaire.
Drink dude.
That's what I call you on the side. So, but now Brian has moved into kind of the outside of the bar general manager position at Socarrat. And actually, I'd love to talk about how that transition went for you. Like, how does it feel going from, like, being behind the bar to moving into full floor operations? And how's
that
work?
Well, I kind of wish I had 750.com before I did that. I'm not going to lie to you. I could be taking all of my notes from everywhere else. I haven't even been on a website now, and now I'm dying to see it. I really enjoy the transition that's happened at Socarrat. It really is a fantastic place. I'm really happy there. I do have to give a ton of credit to, you know, both Boqueria and Aldea, but in particular Aldea, I felt like that was a job that had me behind the bar, but had me doing a lot of things that didn't have anything to do with being behind the bar. Mm-hmm. I would manage on the floor a good amount there. Dealing with training on the floor, about any of the beverage related, especially sherry. I could, if you guys have a sherry episode, please bring me on.
Yes. Oh, you're our first person if we're having a sherry episode.
Done
for
and
sure.
Done.
Yeah.
I'm all about it.
You're our sherry expert.
But
sure.
But no, I mean, you know, really at the end of the day, you know, I was 15 years old when I started working in restaurants. I was, you know, emptying bus tubs. Kind of until working somewhere where all of a sudden I thought, like, why am I spending all of this time to save up money so that I can take time off of work to do theater, which is what I went to school for, and kind of thought maybe the thing I'm doing 40 hours a week is actually the thing I'm doing. And making that change really kind of changed the way I look at this industry. And ever since then, anything that happens on any given day is just really working towards the next day. It's giving me something that, you know, I know how to fix that refrigerator problem, or like, oh, well, that makes it easier to keep the ketchup next to that, or something stupid like that. All the way to, you know, my big thing right now in talking to anyone on my staff, which, if you guys are listening, hello. Hello, Socrat.
Hey, guys. We love
Hi, Socrat staff. Hello.
But that everything has a yes is the answer to everything. Even if people are asking you a question and the answer really is that you can't do what you want them or what they want you to do, you can find a way to answer that question with a yes. You can find a way to make them know that you want to do everything you can, and that even if what they already thought they wanted isn't possible, like, well, this fantastic option is available for you. And it seems like the easiest thing to understand and the most basic part of this industry, but it's taken me, you know, over 15 years to figure out the right way to turn a no into a yes, and the right way to make somebody happy with what you have instead of kind of constantly apologizing, or, you know, which again, kind of similar to working at Bokeria at Socarat, is a busy restaurant. It gets
you guys are very busy.
Yeah, it gets filled up, and you guys are sharing tables with each other, and you are maybe not completely aware of exactly how this whole how much should we order, what is the paella like, how does that work out, and that you really have to guide people through it.
Awesome. So it sounds like you're kind of learning in the process as well as
I mean
it always is once you're moving from one thing to another. But I actually want to bring you back, because I think also one of your expertises is cocktails, so mm-hmm. I want to bring you back kind of the beverage scene that we have right now.
Are you telling me what restaurant X was from the beginning?
Not just
we're gonna all make our guesses later.
It was not Socrat, because no one's ever been on fire since then. So, I mean, not literally,
that's on the Yelp profile. No one has ever been on fire.
So I know right now Socrat doesn't have They're just beer and wine at the moment, I think.
So there are three Socrats. There is one that we just opened a little bit less than 2 months ago on 2nd Avenue between 50th and 51st Street. And head over there for Socrat cocktails. We got booze there, and we're serving it. And you'll have an awesome time, especially if you're a midtown worker or whatnot. Just head over right after work and you can get drinks. But the place I am at and the place that is on Mulberry Street do not have liquor for the moment, and we are expecting that process to happen. So yeah, no, that should definitely take advantage of bar experience.
So what is your feeling on cocktails right now? Like, in this, I mean, I know when you were at Aldea, you did the cocktail list.
Yeah.
And it was an awesome cocktail list. It was a mix of, like, some new things and then kind of some takes on some throwbacks at people. And it was I thought it was a super exciting cocktail list. So
well,
what are you thinking right now? I mean, now you're going to go into a place that's going to eventually get liquor, and you're going to have to do probably another cocktail list. And what are you excited about right now?
So, you know, my whole thing with cocktails is that I think that there's a big history that you should be aware of and that you should pay homage to in everything you do. But not to piss everyone off, but I get really irritated with the, like, handlebar mustache, pin up your sleeves, kind of let's ride the big wheel on front bicycle to work and pretend like it's 1892. I don't really understand it.
This is my tiny Victrola iPod.
Exactly. So I don't really understand why that's what everyone has to do. Like, I totally understand, you know, make an old school, old fashioned, like, you know, don't make everything some sort of TGI Fridays cocktail, although a good Mudslide's kind of delicious at once in a
while. Sure, so craft versus trend.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And that then trend becomes a whole nother thing of, like, you know, is it that this spirit is the big thing? Is it that I'm supposed to feel embarrassed if I like vodka? Or that I'm supposed to want everything to be, you know, 90 proof that I'm having? Like, no, that doesn't make sense. And then a whole other thing of, are you supposed to have cocktails with food? Like, can you pair cocktails with food? Does that really work? So I don't think that there's any one answer to any of it. But I think that, you know, what tastes good and what seems appropriate to where you are. Cocktails don't exist outside of the restaurant that you're working in. There's usually some sort of food, anywhere I've worked anyway, has had some sort of food to go with it. So they're already giving you a direction. And if you can take that direction and move it forward instead of trying to fight it or instead of trying to create your own thing, then I think that's the way to go.
I think that that's actually a great way to, I mean, approach a cocktail list. I mean, because again, most of the time it is with food, and cocktails can be had with food. It doesn't always have to be wine pairings or beer pairings.
Well,
I mean,
and I'm not going to lie to you, this is, you know, I've been to Roberta's a couple of times, and I've never been here and not had the frozen gin and juice here in the backyard.
And yes, it's like, Brian and I, that's what Brian and I do when we get here. We have frozen drinks because it's great.
I'm all about it. When I go out to somewhere that has frozen drinks, like, it's almost like where I work, you don't get to have anything like that. So, like, it's out, like, give me a frozen margarita. Put some mango in it. Like, put some sprinkles on top of it or whatever.
Absolutely.
Like,
give me a swirly straw.
Exactly. Exactly. So I love that. I love going to somewhere that's all wood and kind of distressed and looks really cool like that. And that I can have, you know, like a giant block of ice with, you know, a really fancy cocktail. Like, well, one of the last places I went to Nomad. The cocktails there are just, like, so clean, so sharp. It really makes sense, especially if you sit in the library, if anyone's ever been there. That library at the Nomad is super cool. And then it seems appropriate. It seems like what you should be having there. So I just feel like whatever drink you're serving, someone should be drinking it thinking, this is what I should be having, sitting where I'm sitting right now, having this burger and fries of me, or having this kind of, you know, sous vide thing of seafood with fancy caviar. You know, I mean, wherever you're at, the drink should match it.
I think that's actually a good point and kind of a good note to leave on into our next break is, like, the cocktail should make sense for the food that you're eating. It shouldn't be, you know, we're having pizza and then we're having, like, super fancy cocktails with herbs and things are muddled and, you know, it should be frozen gin and juice. Why not?
This, like, gin and juice is fancy to me, you know?
Well, on that note, thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for that nugget of wisdom. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back here in the morning after on Heritage Radio Network. I hailed every subway, stop on the subway train. I took a good old place to go. There were signs on every door. Why am I feeling on every mom in the home? I got a rest man. But I feel like the FDA won't me to die. We're back at the morning after here on Heritage Radio Network with three special guests. We've been talking a little bit about wine, a little bit about cocktails, and a lot of bit about booze in general.
So we are going to kind of end our segment in the next couple of minutes with, we're going to do a little roundtable chat. I mean, Brian was talking about cocktails and...
So yeah, I just want to say really quickly that I didn't know that you guys were at Louis 649 before coming here, but... That's a fantastic drink. I mean, every drink I've had there, to wrap it up, is felt like what I should be drinking when I was in there. And I always feel like pronunciations I'm terrible about, but Vieux Carré,
that's perfect,
was the first time I had that was at your guys' place. And that really, I mean, I did a whole cocktail that was a riff off of that. That was one of my favorite ones I did. That was a year of my life was that cocktail. So congrats.
And can you tell us what was in that cocktail, Brian?
Well, so Vieux Carré is going to be some cognac and some sweet vermouth and... What's that?
And rye whiskey.
And rye whiskey, yeah, exactly. And some Peychos.
That's correct.
Yeah, I know, it's been a little bit since I made that one.
It's been a while since we've been behind the bar, actually.
But, no, instead of rye, what I was using was I took a bourbon and I infused it with black pepper, so you'd have kind of the spice of a rye, but without it being rye. I used Chinar instead of sweet vermouth, and I used a product that I was buying, and then I ended up kind of making my own version of Maple Jack, which was an apple brandy that was infused with some maple syrup. So that was Benedictine. That's the other thing in a view grade.
That's right. Okay.
So I was kind of doing, instead of Benedictine and cognac, I was doing apple, or I was doing a brandy that was infused with maple, so to have a little bit of sweetness. And I love that drink. I love a drink. So congrats.
It was a special place. I mean, that's really where we all met and where the idea of 750 really flourished and was born. So it always have a special place in my heart. But yeah, I mean, the cocktail, I started in the wine business and moved to the spirits. I really
What were you doing in the wine business, if you don't mind me asking real quick?
I was working for a importer and distributor.
Okay. In New York?
In New York, correct. Domain Select Wine Estates.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
I know Domain.
So while I was there, the spirits program was launched.
When were you there?
The years were... I was working there right out of school, so that's 2006 to 2009. That's when the spirits portfolio was really born, and it was so much fun. Like I got to immerse myself in a part of the industry where I wasn't that familiar with, and started working with the Tipling Brothers, a mixology consulting company, and they taught me everything I knew. And most recently, I helped open the Tippler in the basement of
the Chelsea Market. Yeah. Yes.
That was,
I haven't been there yet, but it
sounds like a Batman villain.
Totally.
It does sound like a Batman villain. it's probably very cool, atmosphere-wise. I mean, the bottom of the Chelsea Market. I've seen pictures before it was anything, so...
It was nothing.
It was nothing.
It was like a dirt floor when we started.
Exactly.
It actually
Which
served...
Was when?
That's a good point.
Yeah, it served as our first office, actually. So we took the startup thing. Instead of being in a garage, we did, the restaurant version and did the basement of the Chelsea Market.
You had a cot and a hot plate in the basement of the Chelsea Market. Yeah.
It was a great start.
Flowing booze for inspiration.
Nice. Speaking about frozen drinks, we actually have a whole segment on we had a whole segment, I think it's still there, called Slushies.
Done.
Frozen Negroni.
Sorry, I messed that up. Lushies. That's why it's
Lushies. All right.
Well, I was going to ask Brian if he could eventually do a riff on the frozen gin and juice, but now you've cornered the market already.
Why not do a frozen sangria? I mean, let's bring it into sober.
That's actually a great idea.
Why not?
You have to get a machine or a blender to do these.
All right, guys, give me some time before
the five of us need to go and get a very large truck of ice, and we just need to go spend a couple days together.
Single-handedly bring
never to be heard from again.
We'll go camping with a giant cooler after.
Once this jumbo ice cube is melted, we can all go.
So where do you guys like to go for cocktails right now? If you had to pick, I'm going to put you on the spot. You want to have a nice cocktail. Where are you going?
I always have I live in the East Village, and I have my go-tos, Summit Bar and the Wayland.
Summit Bar is great.
Well, just last night, Joaquin Simo from Death & Company just opened up his new spot.
Which is where?
On Avenue B between 12th and 13th.
Called what? If we're going to do the shout-out, we'll do the shout-out. So, what's it called?
Pouring Ribbons.
Okay, cool.
Cool spot.
Aaron, any preferences? Places
probably,
right now?
Probably Maison Premier.
Oh, yes.
I live very close by. Just everything about that space I love.
Oysters are insane. And yeah, totally hear that.
Pretty sexy.
Brian, do you have any particular places right now?
I feel like I'm a letdown. It's kind of since I stopped being behind the bar, I kind of stopped.
Well, because you're working all the time now, too. So you actually don't get to
I guess I will say that I did have a good riff on on a Negroni, speaking of Negroni, at Perilla in the West Village. And not because my boyfriend happens to be a manager there and happened to come up with a drink. But it's a really good drink, though. I think you could do like 95 different Negronis and they would all be delicious. But
yeah,
it's a good
Negronis
one.
Are kind of amazing. So
over at the Lincoln, they do a whole Negroni menu, where they have different different bitters and different vermouths, or like plays on vermouths, and different gins that you can select from and just kind of do mix and match Negronis. It's badass.
That's awesome. I was at a rooftop party last night for one of my best friends. It was her birthday and she loves Negroni. She's a Negroni drinker. So we began the night in a sophisticated fashion, and as people became more intoxicated and we ran out of things, people were starting to make fake Negronis, basically, with, I don't even know what was in them, but I know that we had run out of the proper items, and at one point I was fake like, runnies. Is that ginger ale? What are you doing? Ooh. And I was like, shh, 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 just
let them do it.
Yes.
So, yeah, no, I mean, there's right now, there's so many great cocktail places in New York City.
Yeah, what about you, Pam? Where do you go for cocktails?
You know, I haven't gone out for cocktails and wine. I'm usually a wine person, so, but I will tell you, I mean, not to like, you know, I'll give a shout out to Trulia, but we have a new cocktail list that we're doing, and there's a shishito pepper gin tonic that is delicious. There's a mezcal. There is a version of the sidecar. It's actually like a really delicious, fresh cocktail menu. We become more of a cocktail place all of a sudden.
Mezcal, man. I am a fan of that trend. I work for Highlands Restaurant Group, and one of our restaurants, Whitehall on Greenwich, and we actually feature at our other location as well, Highlands. It's called the McQueen, and it's Fidencio. Nice. And then a single malt, we use an Anock Scotch. A little bit of orange bitters and chocolate bitters.
Ooh.
Delicious. It's fantastic. Super autumnal.
And talking about cocktails, see, that's the thing I think is so great, is that in talking about mezcal, to put scotch in there, it just makes so much sense to do that. And I really think that that's like the fun of a cocktail. Exactly. Like, take a Negroni,
absolutely,
mix it around. Take mezcal. Like, what are the things that you're getting from that? Like, throw something that makes sense with that in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of like, you know, whatever works. It's not, there's no rules anymore, and if it tastes good, then it's...
That's our new motto on the morning after.
There are no rules.
We're going to have t-shirts printed available on the website. Speaking of which...
Morning after, there are no rules.
I would
rules
love to take a moment to mention this while we're paused.
Yes, please,
if you like
please,
what you're
Jim.
Hearing today on the morning after, we have so many other amazing programs here on Heritage Radio, and you too can become a member. It's very simple. You can visit www.heritageradionetwork.org and become a member. The benefits are fantastic, the full list of which you will find on the website. We just had an awesome fundraiser last week here in the back of Roberta's for the network. It was a huge success, and it's becoming quite the thing. We're getting a lot of buzz, people are talking about it, people are excited, and I would, if I were you, hop on board now.
Yes, and donate. I mean, if you want to keep us around, we need your help, so
absolutely,
please donate. And so does anyone have any last-minute little things they want to plug? We always do that at the end of every show. Like,
we do shameless plugs at the end.
Guys, shameless plug? Anyone?
You know, we'll just... it'll be a plug for the whole industry here. But, you know, make your way to the portfolio tastings that are coming up.
Cool.
We're doing Verity and Martins on Monday, tomorrow.
Yeah, which I saw. Yeah, I did see that.
So
this is going to be good.
We'll have digital tasting books available, both of those, and, you know, we'll both be there to kind of walk you through the experience, too. So
great.
We're very excited about it, and, you know.
Cool.
Then on Tuesday, we're doing the same with a small book called Peter Warren Selections.
Nice.
So come check it out.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
Brian, plugs? Any plugs?
God, it's kind of transparent now. I'm plugging Sokrat at this point, but obviously come into the Sokrat. But no, I mean, you know, sitting in a room
come
like this.
Come see Brian. He's lots of fun.
No, but it's like you were saying earlier, you know, everyone kind of can move around either quickly or slowly. Everyone in this industry ends up knowing each other some way or the other. So supporting each other, I think, is really awesome.
Absolutely. Pam, any plugs?
Just listen to The Morning After next weekend. And I did promise I'd say Go Steelers. So Go Steelers.
Go Steelers.
Go Steelers. I know they're playing the Jets and we're in New York and whatever. Go Steelers.
I have a personal plug.
Yeah, please.
I got engaged yesterday.
Yay!
Oh, my God.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Joe.
The crowd is listening.
And actually, another related plug, my beautiful fiance is bartending at restaurant Marc Forgione. Her name is Lindsay. She's the best bartender in the land. And she's stirring up some interesting stuff this week, so you should go visit her. She's a lovely blonde girl with a German tattoo on her arm.
Can you give the address of Forgione's just so everyone knows where?
It is on the corner of Reed and Oh Dear.
I was going to say, that's on the spot.
Yeah, I'm like, it's sorry. No, sorry. It's okay.
Take, you know what? Take the two... Take the one train to Chambers. Take the one train to Chambers and just start yelling, Lindsay, Lindsay, and she'll come out and find you.
Awesome.
He's right off of Hudson.
So fantastic. I think we want to thank all of our in-studio guests.
Thank you, guys.
We have Aaron and Brian and Gianfranco. Such a fun name to say. Yeah. Thank you for coming and joining us on Sunday. We'll, you know, we'll have fun and we'll bring you in again, you know. You never know.
We're doing our thing. We're going to, hopefully we'll talk about Sherry another time with
Yes,
Brian.
We are going to definitely talk about Sherry with Brian. So
we'll have to, and we'll have to bring you guys back and we can, we'll all get our digital booklets out.
We'll do a tasting, and we'll have some Sherry with us so we can discuss.
Well,
it's been a true pleasure, Miss Pam Stubbs, to co-host with you yet again.
Always, Jen.
Always a pleasure.
I look forward to it every time we do it. So
can't wait to do it again. For those of you listening, once again, this is The Morning After. After, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.